So it's still not a lot of purge line to get all of that out. So I don't know how some of the machines need so much purge. And then that's why these look like they're a lot of waste, but they're not that much at all.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Meet the Makers. Today I have a super exciting guest in the 3D printing space. He's one of the most underrated 3D printers on TikTok. He has a super unique style for doing multicolor printing, and he is also a master in the RC space. I have Tim from VS Customs. Tim, I am so excited to have you on here. Thank you for coming on to the podcast today.
I'm pumped to be here. This looks like it's going to be a good time.
It will be. I know a lot of people were excited for you to come on here, so it's going to be enjoyable for everybody. Now, if anybody isn't familiar with your work, they have to pop over there first because you have a really unique style of printing. If you're listening to the audio only version, I encourage you to come over to the video side of things on YouTube today so you can get a preview. But can you just start out and maybe tell us a little bit about how you got into the style of printing that you do? Because it's not like anything that I've ever seen anyone else do before.
I got into it by just, I used to do RC, very big into it. And I started designing RC truck stands, actually something like.
Okay.
And I want to put people's logos on it. So, you know, different guys in RCs have different logos, different companies, whatever. And I was like, oh, okay, I should be able to do this. I should do this. And I used to get companies permission to do their logos and all that. And I just fell into it. And then I started looking and I'm like, oh, okay, I can do five colors. And I started maxing out at five colors. And I'm like, okay, I started designing stuff with 7 and 8 and 9. And I'm going, okay, this is getting crazy. So
yeah.
Now I'm into 50 or 12 and I could use more. It's just expanded out.
Yeah. You have some of the most colorful prints I ever saw. The first time I saw your video, I was like, there's some kind of editing happening here. This couldn't possibly be what I think it is, what I'm looking at. But the more I started watching your content, you have this wild setup. I can't quite tell from your videos. Did you custom build the setup that you have, or is it something that you purchased? How does that work?
So there was a guy, he uploaded it on Thingiverse. It was an arcade style box. And it was a nice design. I just didn't like it. It was too squared off. It didn't look good. So I redrew and redesigned the whole thing. And I'm like, okay, he had just a Switch logo on the side. And I'm going, I can't do just a Switch logo. It's going to have some colors. So I started doing basic five color setups. I did like Mario Brothers and Pokemon and stuff like that. And it was cool. Not a lot of people were doing it, but I had to expand from there. And now I'm getting into crazy graphics with it. So.
Yeah, I like your style a lot that you do. It's very whimsical. When you're designing stuff for the prints that you do, most people I talk to, they're using Blender, they're using Fusion 360. Are you using something like that? Or is it something different that you do to make these 2D/3D prints?
It all depends. So I have Fusion 360 I use. I play around with Autodesk Inventor. No, I'm not Inventor, sorry. Adobe Illustrator and Photoshop. So sometimes I will make stuff up in Photoshop and figure out my colors or strip colors away from graphics. Simple stuff I can break down, strip graphic colors out of it, make it into an outline. But I use a combination of all the programs. And if I can't use all of them, I end up using just Fusion and redraw everything in line work.
I get stressed out if I have to make a box in Fusion. What does that process even look like when you're getting started with that?
So I take, for instance, the most current one I'm doing, which I put a couple of videos out, was the Ninja Turtles. I had some people commenting, just turn it into an SVG. It is way too much to it to make it an SVG, to break it down that far. So I basically lie it out on the Switch side in the picture. And I use, you never see that squiggly line tool?
Yeah.
I use that. And I literally just click draw and basically trace out all the lines.
That's so interesting. Now, when you're tracing out all these individual pieces, do you have a color version of what you're doing maybe to the side of you so that you like
it's what
do
I
get different colors together?
No, it's what I use right on it. So I put the actual photo. So the Ninja Turtle photo is right on, like for instance, I did this. In Fusion, it's right on there. There's pictures on there. So I can sit there and do the full black outline and then I break it down from there. So once I get black outlined on, then I start getting into each color and each shading of color that's inside.
Okay.
So for instance, the Ninja Turtle one, when it was originally drawn, I had 17 colors and I had to figure out what to minus to make it down to 12 and still look proper.
Yeah. Now, when you're going from something that's like digital, you have unlimited colors. Does that kind of limit down what you've been able to bring into a 3D printing space?
No. I figure out ways to work it, just work the design. That's the pleasure. If you work with an SVG, like a lot of people say, it's you're constrained. You're constrained. You can't really change it a lot. Yeah, you can cut some of the lines out. But when it transfers over as an SVG, it's a double line, sometimes triple line, sometimes it's wacky. Where when I freehand draw it, if I don't like something in the drawing or I need to minus it out or the line's too small, I can make it wider. I can make it narrower. I can make it look like it's blended. So it makes it a little easier that way.
Gotcha. Okay. You make it sound very easy, but I know if I were to go in and do this, it sounds like truly rocket science to me.
Yeah.
But it's honestly baffling to me how you ever figured out how to do this. Because again, I think you're the only person doing this that I know of. I've never seen anybody else do this.
I see some guys doing similar to what I used to do, working with five colors. They do the odd logo, or they'll do I can't even think of. They'll do the big mouse. They'll do him, and it's basic shapes. I've really tried to step it up and go into shading. I had to get rid of the thought where if you're thinking of a drawing, you put black lines in between everything.
Yeah.
I had to get that out of my head. I started getting rid of black lines and only using them for the basic shade. Everything else is color to color. So that just, it took me a while to get there. It's easy, but it's not easy.
Nothing about it sounds easy. I guess as you're saying that, the thing that's I'm trying to wrap my brain around is as I guess like the printer's laying down the print, I know I see your purge. I don't know if purge tower would even be the right word. Like it's kind of like a purge strip that you have. Yeah. Yes.
So that's all the purge color as it goes.
Yeah. For anybody who's listening to the audio version and hasn't seen yours, it's like a rainbow spectrum in every one of those. So I guess as the printer is laying it down, is like deciding where it's doing these purges in the different colors, is that a whole different process that you have to configure when you're slicing it up, or how does that part of it work?
So I can adjust how much it purges out per color, but you only have, when you're running the 12 colors, you only have so wide of a build plate.
Yeah.
And so I have to play with how much it purges to make sure that white is white by the time it goes to print it. And it's got rid of all red, because if red came before it, it's going to turn out to be pink. And a lot of people call it bleeding.
Yeah.
So I have worked long and hard on trying to get this figured out on good numbers to work with for purges, and I don't have any bleeding. So it is a bit of a science. Sometimes I got to make it wider. I got to make it narrower. I got to squish it down over onto one side. It can be a process. Putting it into the print table.
Yeah. No, I believe it. I guess like when you started doing this, was it a lot of experimenting in terms of, were you constantly just like laying down prints and being like, oh, blood on this part. Oh, like I have to refigure out how to do it, or how was the beginning for you?
I would do prints and I would say, okay, well, this color's bleeding through. And as I say, you can still see some people's prints when they're doing multicolor. Where it changes to a black, there's a darker line around it.
Well, yeah.
That's where I've had to figure out how to get rid of that. And it does take a lot of waste and a lot of printing and a lot of time. But once you get it figured out, it's like, I can turn on any of my printers. I can slice it one try and choose it, good to go.
Oh. That's wild to me because, like you said, a lot of people are starting to get the bamboos and they're getting the EMS systems. I see as they post those prints, it definitely must be a learning curve with it, because I'll see they kind of, like you said, have the stripes or the lines going through, or it's just not quite right with that color transition. And yours, when I see them, they're just so crisp and it's all perfectly transitioned between the different colors. And it looks like it is manufactured. I guess it is manufactured, but it looks like it's manufactured and not the way that it's being manufactured, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
And that was my whole plan when I started getting into doing more of a graphic side of it all. I wanted it to look like it was a sticker. Somebody put a sticker on the side of it and you're like, oh, okay, that looks proper. It's got the proper colors. It's got, and I'm like, but it doesn't, it's not a sticker. It doesn't come off. And that's why it took me so long to get it dialed in. I see the people with the bamboos and ice, they need to change. All the people that love the bamboos, give it. It's a great machine. It's not for me, but it's a great machine. I don't get the correlation on how it has such a big purge, the poop balls and the purge block, on how there's such a bleed of color. It should be pretty straightforward. I'm like, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's what I thought was interesting, because when I watch people's videos of the bamboo, they will have, like you said, it'll poop it out of the back, and then they still have these giant blocks that are coming off. And when I see your purge areas, it's seems like you have what I consider a pretty minimal amount of purging going on your machine.
The smallest one usually is black. When I'm purging either black, it's 50 millimeters.
Okay.
If I'm purging white from black, I'm probably 180 mils, 170 mils. So it's still not a lot of purge line to get all that out. So I don't know how some of the machines need so much purge.
Yeah.
I'm straight white in 175 millimeters. That's why these look like they're a lot of waste, but they're not that much at all.
I thought it was funny because before we hopped on here today, I was kind of going through your videos and I was checking out some of the comments and I saw people were like, oh, it's so much purge material. And in my mind, I was like, that's almost no purge material. It's like very minimal, but there's always going to be those salty people on the internet who have to be the Debbie Downer. But I will say like the purge areas, I think that they're super cool. I really like how they look. Have you ever, in the back of your mind, like, do you ever think of doing some kind of like project with them? I know that sounds weird, but like a project with the purge areas?
I had some ideas for, especially the ones that get long and rectangular. I was thinking about cutting them up and doing like resin keychains, surrounding it in a clear resin.
Yeah.
You drill a hole through it, you got a little cool, little colorful keychain that's all rainbow on the inside. But other than that, I have no ideas. It kind of just collect or I toss them out.
Interesting. I don't know if this fits your aesthetic for your office, but I could see like maybe one wall just entirely being covered in purges. It might be a little trippy in there, but yeah, I think it'd be cool.
Turn on the black plate, all of a sudden it's glowing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, the purge lines are beautiful. Your prints are beautiful. When you're laying down a print, do you keep a large supply of different colors on hand, or do you tend to print with like the same 12 colors over and over? Typically, like, obviously black and white's probably consistent, but what does your filament inventory look like?
I'm probably somewhere 50 or 60 different colors.
Okay, wow.
And I'm always adding more. Like my recent order was, 8 new colors? Just because I was like, oh, I need some black. And that's a cool yellow, and that's a cool purple, and that'll work for this print, and that'll work. So I end up amalgamating or taking in a whole bunch of different colors to the point I have a vast palette. And the problem is I'll be going to do one design, and I'm like, oh, I'm missing a color.
Oh, no.
So then next thing I know, it's a $300 order of filament.
Jeez. I hear some people, they're like, oh man, I had to order a new roll of filament. It was $30. $300 is a little bit of a tougher pill to swallow.
Yeah. They get free shipping at $125.
There you go.
I'm like,
guess you're winning.
$125, and I'm like, okay, just got to keep going from there. It's free shipping. It's saving money now.
It would be crazy not to have a $300 order at this point.
Yeah, it's a real issue.
Now, one of the other things I was super curious about when I started seeing your setup for how the filament runs through there, it looks like it's a lot of tubing that it goes through. Doing a filament swap on there, is it difficult to do it? Because it looks like it would be quite the process to swap out the colors.
It's not bad. So on my 5 color, it's a little easier because it's just got basically, well, you can see it behind me here.
But
I'll try to explain it. It's got some dry boxes and the tubes, I can point my finger in the right way. The tubes go across and then down and they go into what is a buffer. So when the filament's got to back out of the nozzle and go back up, it needs somewhere to go. So it goes inside the buffer, but it's not that bad. It's literally it just slides through because the diameter inside is about 2.5 mil. So the 1.75 fits there. So you just basically feed it through, pull it through, and then all of it's with quick couplers on it. So you can just unhook the hose. So once it comes to a certain part, you can just unhook it and you can just pull it through that way and feed it through.
Okay.
So the 12 color takes a little bit more time because it's got 2 buffers plus 2 spools or air buffer. They just backfeed into nowhere. Yeah, it can take probably 15 minutes changing all 12 spools.
Yeah, you must be really fast because I have to say when I have to change like my single spool over here, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll just stay in that color because I'm not really trying to change out this roll of filament right now.
I've changed out spools. If I'm running low on a color, because of the design I use, I can get away with doing 1 or 2 layers in said color. So mid-print, because I have multiples, I can pull out, say, this color green, feed in a different green.
Wow.
That I don't like, or I have a whole spool or a couple spools I feed it in, and it'll fill that area in a different green, but you won't notice it on the design because it's green, but it's just different. So it I do stuff that way to keep, make colors last. So it's changing modes pretty quick.
Interesting. You and your color changes, that sounds like my personal version of help, I'm being honest, but I guess it's all part of the process. I guess that's why you have such unique results, is putting in that work on those color changes. But yeah, it's really interesting.
I've realized it's a little different. What if I'm flipping around and I'm like, so it's gotta be pretty normal. I'll put out some videos, what I'm doing. And she's like, that's crazy. I'm like, is it?
Yeah, I follow quite a fancy printers. I have to say, I've never quite seen something like your setup. Even just, I thought it was funny. You're like, oh, this real basic setup behind me. And for people who can't see it or are not familiar, you have these like 3D printed, they're like dehydrator boxes, aren't they?
They're dry boxes.
Yeah.
So they got desiccant inside it just to keep the spools dry, which I generally, it's minute now because my 12 spools just hang on my wall and they'll hang there for days or weeks. But I, at the time, I was like, oh, yeah, film has got to be dry. You got to feed it through this. It's got to keep it good. And it's a neat setup. It was a lot of printing for those boxes that are useless.
I was wondering that. I think you're in Ottawa, right?
Yeah.
Ottawa, Canada? I'm originally from Buffalo, New York. So I'm not, originally wasn't too far away from there. It can get pretty humid in Buffalo. Is it humid where you are?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's probably 40% humidity in here right now.
Okay. Wow.
And my prints don't have stringing. I don't have any problems. As I said, they'll hang on my wall for 2 or 3 weeks. I do have a dryer. If I do find that a spool is super stringy, I'll stick it in the dryer for 4 hours and take it out and put it in and keep printing.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm here in Arizona. I've only ever 3D printed in Arizona. And my household humidity, if it's 10%, I'm lucky. It's very dry here. I never know when people are like, oh, you have to put it in a filament dryer. You have to put it in a dehydrator. I never know if it's like bullshit or not, because my whole house is like a natural dehydrator.
Being on a lot of the boards and being pretty with the crew for a bunch of years, I've seen a lot of people complain about stringiness and PLA and the MDO and how much it sucks with this. And that's why I got into the multicolor. And it originally was because everybody said it was terrible. I'm like, okay, I got to buy one of these. So I bought one off a guy who said it's absolutely garbage. And I had it up and printing in maybe a week. And as I said, I might have an odd stringing issue, and it's humid. I've had it probably 60 in here. And
wow.
It can get bad. I try to, in the summertime, I put the AC on, it cuts down on it.
Hey, I guess if it works for you.
I'm not having problems. It's working.
Now, the other thing for you, obviously is like pretty critical for the style that you print in, but I've noticed you have, although it looks like you might use a textured build plate, you have the flattest, smoothest, like most perfect first layers anybody I've seen use. What's your secret there? Is it the machine? Are Prusas just so amazing that's what it is? Or how are you so good at getting that first layer?
I won't say Prusas are that good. Prusas are that good and they're generally pretty straight, but I set out full build volume squares. I had done for first layer testing, and I've actually got through, because I was in the RCU world, I have many different small washers of different thicknesses. Okay.
Yeah.
So I've gone through under the build plate and set it out that they're actually perfectly flat.
Oh.
And then because it has automatic level, we make sure again that it's automatic leveling before every print. So there's like a 7x7 bed test. But I've also made sure that the bed is perfectly straight.
That's interesting. I've never heard somebody use a method like you're the across the board. Your setup is like that. I've never heard somebody do this before, but it seems to work really well for you. That's a really unique method for having a good first layer on there.
It's the mechanic side of me. I'm the mechanic by trade. So I'm like, okay, something's broken. I have to figure out how to fix it, how to make it work right. Because I only want to do it once. I don't want to have to be continually fighting with it and changing this and changing that. And I'm like, I'll take it apart, I'll fix it, I'll put these washers in here. And I used my vernier. I measured out what the deviation was at. I put the washer in there, screwed it down. I haven't touched it since.
Wow.
Like,
it's pretty cool.
That orange one there started as a Mark 1 1.75 Prusik. It was like threaded rod. It was way back when. It's probably my biggest workhorse. in the multicolor setup.
It seems like you have no problems over there. So I guess keep going with the way you do it. Now, we've talked about this like a few times. We've hinted at it. It sounds like you were really into RC before. Did that kind of have any inspiration to you getting into 3D printing? Or how did that like whole timeline play out for you?
I never wanted to 3D print. Oh, and I got into RC because I used to do custom Hot Wheels.
Okay.
So I used to do custom painted and won trophies and stuff like that at conventions for custom Hot Wheels. And I was like, oh, I want something I can play with. And RC crawling was starting to get big. So I was like, I'll build a crawler. One turned into two, turned into five. And then I started building crazy crawlers and I was putting on events. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I was made, back in the day, we used to make scale stuff out of styrene.
Okay.
So plastic study, we sit there and your hands would get all sticky and you're sanding. You're like, this is going to look cool. And kind of look cool. And
yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going to start designing. I'm going to learn. I was off work for about 6 months. I had some medical issues going on and I was sitting at home and I'm like, I'm going to learn how to draw and forget it. I'm going to do it. So I had used Autodesk Inventor and I had this. Before my whole computer setup I have now, I had a gateway all-in-one single screen. This thing was terrible. And an Autodesk Inventor barely worked. And I was like, I have to learn. And I learned how to draw in CAD. And I used to get stuff printed at Shapeways, I think it's called.
Okay.
So they do 3D printing, like nylon printing.
All right.
So it's all laser centering and stuff was great. Except it cost so much money every time I wanted a part. So a buddy of mine says to me, I got a 3D printer. You have any interest in buying it? Man, I don't want a 3D printer. He goes, think about it. You can just do prototypes of what you're sending out to Shapeways. Make sure it's good so you don't have to order it. I'm like, yeah, fine. I'll buy it. And that was the Cursor Mark One.
Wow.
And had a smaller glass build plate on it. No auto level. I had to learn how to level it all the time. And so I started that and the prints were terrible. I'm like, oh God, this thing is horrible. I start looking online. Cursor had an upgrade. This 2.5. I'm like, oh, $500. Holy. I ordered it. I'm like, I need it. And I now do less RC and I do more printing because I'm like, oh, this is way funner. I used to make all the scale stuff, truck stuff and all different stuff, light bars. And I fell in love, I think, more with printing and designing than I did anything else. But I always shift hobbies. I'm always moving around.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I'm a hobby jumper by trade. That's my famous for hobby jumping. But I had a very similar, actually, not similar at all, but kind of similar experience to you in getting interested in 3D printing. I had got it originally. I had a small houseplant shop at the time. I thought I was going to make plant pots. And kind of like you, I was like, I'm not really interested in 3D printing, but I'll just get one and like, I'll just make stuff with it. And then fast forward 6 months. And now here we are. Now we're on a podcast together about 3D printing. So obviously you can see how that went, but. Yeah, it seems to capture the hearts of people. A lot of people I know have similar stories where they were like, I'll try one on a whim. And now they're just like super deep into the hobby.
Yeah, I think I'm 6 years in now. And all of my printers are Prusas. I'm a Prusa fanboy. It's just they work and I know how to make them work. So I stuck with it. It's kind of the OCD guys are like, oh, get an Ender, get this guy. I'm like, yeah, but once I got work, I know how to make them work and I know how to fix them. So I'll stick with that.
Kate, no, I'm right there with you. I hear amazing things about Prusa. People who have them, like you said, there's a lot of fanboys for the Prusas, but I started on an Ender and don't get me wrong, I'm ready to upgrade off of my Ender. I have the Snapmaker back there too, but I learned, like, when I first got into printing, that fucking thing broke every goddamn day. Like, every day I was in there repairing it and upgrading it, and the thing is, I got so comfortable with it now that it doesn't matter what happens to that printer. Like, I could tear that thing apart and put it back together in 15 minutes, and I'm a big advocate for if you're familiar with it and it works, just do it. So yeah, I can see how you stick with what you like.
I know what to do. When you know how to fix it, your failure rate goes down.
Yeah.
I can have, like, for instance, I was doing a live today. It actually just stopped now, but I had a load failure on my multicolor setup. I was able to come home, fix the multi-load, hit resume, away it goes. So if you don't know, you're like, oh, what did I do? How do I fix this thing? You wasted filament, right?
Yeah. I know when I first got iPrinters, it felt like I was spending hours every day, like, troubleshooting it and fixing things. And now it was such simple things where now it would be a 2-minute repair for me. But I didn't know at the time. I had no idea what I was doing. So I would spend I would spend half my day trying to do something stupid, like swapping out a wire, swapping out a nozzle, something like that. Yeah, yep. I can relate to what you're saying there, being able to do it faster now. We touched on bamboos a little bit earlier, and I know you were like, it's not the machine for me. When they first came out and they were super fast, they were multicolor, and I guess like for, I've only been printing for 6 months. So at least for me, when I came into it, it seemed like the first hobby machine that was really like built for multicolor. Did the thought ever cross your mind of maybe I'll get one? Was it ever enticing to you?
Yes, I'll admit it. I almost sold the black and purple one there to buy a bamboo. And I was like, oh yeah, it's cool. And then I started looking into it more. Some guys, it doesn't matter to you. But for me, open source is a big thing. I'm up here in Canada. So if I have my printer down and I can't get a part from the local Canadian place in 2 days, what's the point of it? Especially when I'm trying to sell designs and prints and I'm down a printer. So now what am I going to do? I'm going to go out and spend $1,400 and go buy another cruiser because I need my machine running. I didn't like the exclusivity of it. I get it and I get the market that fits. And I don't want people to take my views as a bad thing, but I feel like the bamboo was a good market printer for people who like vendors. It was a good replacement to change up that kind of market. The people that are generally into cruises are generally going to build and are into tinkering with a cruise, because there's also two different kinds of people who run cruises. They're more inclined to build a Voron. And that's more if I want something that's big, something that's fast, I'm going to build a Voron. And for me, the benefits of a bamboo is the same print size as my Prusa. So the only advantage I have is speed.
Yeah.
Speed ain't going to cut it for me. It's got to be more. And I want to build a 350 Voron that can do 10 colors. So now I can print bigger and colors again. It's a good product. Longevity, I'm curious to see how long it does and how well it does in the market and how long they can keep with supplying people, because it is maybe a year in. I could be wrong, it could be less than that, but it is a nice, good product, but it's just not for this guy.
You seem to have a little more of a specific need, I'd say, probably than your average 3D printer.
All mine are modified. Like this one is heavily modified, the purple and black one. It's got a 20 by 40 frame on it. It's got an upgraded Dragon hot end. It runs an SKR BTT board. So it's 32-bit board versus 8-bit. So I learned how to do VS Code and play around with Marlin and do all that stuff. And so all of them run bare X ends. So they got a little bit more room. They have better cooling. Everyone's modified. And so if I can't mod it, I'm like,
Not for you.
I can't do it. Yeah. I got to be able to mod everything.
It's interesting that you say that, like to your point that you were saying, there's like different flavors of Prusa people. You sound like you're the type of person who just like, would I be correct in saying you enjoy tinkering as part of the hobby?
Oh,
is that like part of the fun for you?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, what's this cool part? What can I upgrade? Oh, that's a new design. Let's try that out. Yeah. I'm definitely tinkering.
Yeah. Now to rewind back to something you said a little earlier, you were talking about being up in Canada, maybe. Did I like misunderstand, but is it harder to get 3D printing parts like where you are?
Not open source though, but like for instance, bamboo, I got to order from bamboo. I think the only places to order is down in the US. So I have to pay shipping from the US, which is usually insane. Customs, if I'm ordering over $20. So what, I order a hot end, I'm paying customs. And the way duty works here is if it goes by UPS or FedEx, they charge you the tax on it plus a $20 fee. Because they looked at it and decided to charge you the tax on it. So I'm like, okay, so I bought a $30 part and I'm paying $30 for shipping and $30 for duty. I'm like, I didn't save any money. I'm $60 in on a $20 part or $30 part or $90 in on a $30 part. Sorry. It cost effective wise, I need to be able to have a printer I can tinker with and get locally.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense, you talking through that. Do you have a lot of fees in there, a lot of hidden fees. Do you have a micro center or anything like that up by you? Like, where do you typically go to get your stuff?
Online.
Okay.
Yeah, everything. I live outside of Ottawa in the Ottawa Valley in the middle of nowhere. My neighbors across the road are cows. In the city, I can go to this place called Canada Computers. They carry some filament there. It's hit and miss. But no, most of my stuff's online. And I got to order it from Toronto. So it's usually a day or two to come to me from there.
Okay.
That's where the that's where the big filament orders.
You got to stock up while you can. So that probably sucks then, though. So if, let's say that you're going to lay down a print and you run out of black, you got to wait a couple of days. It's not same day delivery.
I know. I don't run out of black. I think I have six spools of black. And when I get down to two, I'm making a filament order. It's got to be there. And I panic because sometimes there's only a certain filaments black I run. It's got to be PLA plus. It just, I find that if I get any kind of value or eco or any kind of the cheap stuff, the super cheap stuff, I get stringy and it's just terrible. So I found a black that works. Luckily enough, I found it by two different places because the one place I usually go to is forever sold out right now. I start hitting up this other place, and that was the recent place I just bought all my stuff from, and they got it. I'm like, bring me the black, get me some more.
So. Interesting. Now, when you're running a 12 color setup, do you run into problems that, like you said, you run PLA plus for your black? Do you run like normal PLA? And I guess, are you able to adjust the settings per color channel?
Yeah. I can adjust flow rates. I can adjust temperatures. Okay. I can adjust everything, because the way Crucis Slicer works is each color is a different extruder.
Okay.
So it treats every color as a different extruder. If I needed to run black at 200 degrees and I had to run the next color red at 210, I can adjust it and the nozzle would heat up to 210. It's purging. So you can play with it that way. The only time I usually have an issue with filament is it's chalky. I was trying to run a green that was a recycled filament, but it kept leaving little pieces in the color chain.
Hmm.
So then it would read that, oh, the filament wasn't extracted. There's still filament stuck in it. So then it would pause the machine and does a whole thing. So I do have to watch that. I've tried to run woods on multicolor. That doesn't work either. It really does not like doing wood and changing it like that. It usually messes it up.
I've never run wood filament myself, but it sounds like no machine likes wood filament. I've heard like multiple horror stories of people running wood filament.
I can run it on the black one, the black purple machine, because it's got a Dragon hot end, high flow Dragon hot end. And because it's a single color, I just crank it right up hot and it just spits it up. It smells great. It smells like I'm cutting wood. It's like straight cutting wood. I'm like, well, yeah, I could use that filament all day long. It's a great smell.
That's how I feel about laser engraving. I love laser engraving wood. It makes my entire house smell like a campfire. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That would smell good.
Now, it sounds like you have this whole system. Like, it's very dialed in. It sounds like you really just, you have your system down. Is there any story or like any situation that comes to mind of some kind of like catastrophic failure or just real big problem that has happened when doing these prints?
Oh yeah. I've come in and that one right there, the black and orange one, I came in one day and I don't know if the nozzle was loose. It had just squirted out plastic everywhere. It was all engulfed. It ripped all the wires out of the hot end. I'm like, oh my God. And it said finished print. And I'm like, finished print. There was plastic everywhere. But luckily enough, I keep, for instance, the wires, the thermistor and the temperature, it all in the house now. I have a bunch of them.
Okay.
But it was a mess. I just cranked it up to about 290 degrees and I just let the plastic melt off and started wiping it up. I'm like, I just hate it. So I've had my fair share of catastrophic. I've had filament come out and jam in belts. And,
oh, God. Sounds terrible.
And I leave. I'm out of the house for 7 a.m. till I get home at 6 o'clock at night. So I'll start a print.
Wow.
And I don't have cameras on it. I don't do anything.
Just cross your fingers.
I get home and I'm like, all right. Hey, it worked.
Man, hearing you talk about it, it's really something to me. I don't know. I've said this 15 times. So I've just never quite seen something like this. When I know that you have a shop online, when people are ordering from you, do people even know that it's 3D printed? Because honestly, if I just saw your product, I don't know that I would know that it was 3D printed.
I think so. I for the most part, I have people contact me all the time. I do a lot of stuff more than anything.
Okay.
And the website is nice. It's not the way I wanted to go. I had Etsy before. Yeah, I'm still talking with them, but they ain't giving me it back. But no, not a lot of the time people are talking to me and we go back and forth before purchase. A lot of other people have seen my stuff because I do automotive parts as well.
Yeah.
So there's a whole automotive community that I'm part of and they pass around my information and guys all know it's all 3D printed. So.
Now the automotive parts that you do, are they mostly like for like interior automotive stuff, or is it like actual like physical parts for the car itself? What do you typically do in that realm?
One of my videos showed that I have a 91 Civic. Now on my car, I have a Japanese front end. The unfortunate with having a Japanese front end is the headlights aren't readily available here in Canada or North America for that part. So I created a little, I call it a conversion kit, but it's a little adapter put in there, and you can now get rid of the headlight that they sell and you can just put a 9008 LED bulb in there.
Oh, okay.
And it just clips in. So I 3D printed it and I've had it on my car for 2 years now. Hasn't melted. It's carbon PL.
Okay.
So it's tried and true. The other stuff is stuff like this. It's an actual like plug end for the harness, but they're not available anymore.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of the old Civic clusters, guys would just take them out of cars and clip it in Japan and then sell it. The problem was, there's no way you can get their hands on the plugs for that cluster anymore. So now you have a nice expensive cluster, but no way to wire it.
Gotcha.
So I designed up the clips so that now you can pin it just like a factory wire and plug it right in. So I do stuff more like that. And now those are resin printed. They just help hold up a little better because it's the heat on the dash and stuff. I play around with what I'm printing. It's just more of conversion or pieces to help out. I've done some harness ends for guys and stuff that's just not produced anymore.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but probably like for people who are just reworking older cars, I have to imagine there's probably a big market for that, like across the board, not just Hondas, but everything across the board of parts that probably aren't in production anymore, aren't in existence. Is that like a whole market in 3D printing for people who do that type of stuff?
There is. There's a lot of people that design up some cool stuff out of 3D printing. I've even seen guys getting into doing front bumpers, full wide body kits. They'll print it out in pieces, glue it all together, and they'll use that as their mold.
Okay.
So there is a big market for 3D printing in the automotive side of things. Yeah, it's crazy. I've dabbled in it a little bit, but once you start playing around with it more, you realize, oh, okay, there's a lot of people doing this. And you realize, like, for instance, stuff I do, I've sold hundreds of these headlight conversions to people all over the world. And I'm like, how did nobody think of this? Like, this car is 30 years old, man. This has been a problem forever and nobody's thought of this. And some guys are like, why didn't you go with this headlight bulb or that? I'm like, because this one just works. I went with what was easiest. Yeah, no, I think there's a market for it. You just got to figure out your niche and what you want to do. I wouldn't start designing stuff for an Audi because I don't know Audis. I don't. But.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things I think that, driven by having a need for the problem, I think is a really good way to approach it. It's something I never would have thought. My dad actually just picked up a new Jeep this week and he's always had a company car. It was the first car that he's purchased himself in 30 years. So he was super jazzed about it. And as soon as he got in, he's, man, the turn signal's like short on this thing. It would be great if you could 3D print something that made the turn signal longer. But like, you would never, unless you were driving that car and you were in the car and you were sitting there using it, you would never think, oh, I bet somebody needs a longer turn signal. So it's, yeah. I have to imagine like a lot of the parts that are getting developed or things like that are probably just along those lines of when you realize it's a problem.
In my car, for instance, there's no cup holders. And the big joke in the EF Honda community is you jam your coffee in between the parking brake handle and the seat.
Yeah.
It's just jammed in there. That's a cup holder. Some guys have designed up pieces that can go on your center or on your middle console that kind of wrap
over
it. And you have cup holders on it now, or you pull out the ashtray, you remove the ashtray, and it's a cup holder. So guys have gone into that kind of extent of designing.
Interesting. It's very interesting. Now, I don't know if you've seen it. It's been floating around my TikTok recently, but there was, I think it was a father-son duo. They recently 3D printed like the frame of the body of a Lamborghini. Have you seen that floating around?
I did.
Yeah.
That's pretty, you know what? It's a slick car. I wouldn't imagine doing it in PLA.
I believe it was Joel who was doing an interview with him. And I thought he said that. He's, it printed in PLA. And I was like, there's no way it's printed in PLA. But
PLA, I had a piece around here. The PLA was outside for about 2 minutes. And I don't even know where it went. It was black. I left it out and it just bananaed.
Yeah.
That was printed for a car. And that's clearly not going inside it anymore. Print a whole Lamborghini in it. Wow.
Yeah. When I heard that, I was like, I was like, he must have misspoke. There's no way that they printed that in PLA. But I don't know. It might be. Atlanta's getting a body restyle, I guess, pretty soon. The first day it goes out when it's sunny out.
Yeah, be a little bit scared there.
Yeah, for sure. Now, do you ever see yourself blending like those two hobbies together? It sounds like you do a little bit now, but like maybe getting back into RC stuff and doing more of that with 3D printing, or do you see those as kind of two separate things for you?
No, I'm unfortunately slowly stepping more out of RCs. As I said before, I was a mechanic for 8 years, and I had managed a store for a few years, and I went back in mechanics for a year, and I hit a dark spot, and I couldn't do it for a living. I can't turn wrenches. So I'm back managing place now, and I'm getting into building my own car. So I have my Civic I'm working on. I have a friend's Civic I'm working on. I'm helping a 30 by 40 shop outside my house. So I have a Fox Body Mustang in there right now that we're going to be working on. And I just bought today a 54 Chevy truck. My next project is I'm moving now out of RCs, but into bigger cars. Ever since doing a 54 Chevy, I'm like, yeah, I really want an old school airbagged on the ground 54 Chevy, all patinaed out, just cruising around. So I could see me moving, keeping printing as the artistic side and the fun side. The automotive will stay automotive. And I might do the odd piece here and there for my needs. And it's the same thing actually that I did with RCs. I only designed stuff that I wanted for myself. And then I just offered it to people. It was never, I never got into this to start designing, to design for everybody else. And I was like, oh, no, I had a need. I designed, I filled my need. Do you want it too? So that's what made me want to get into, maybe share it. Now, I don't know if I'm going to do too much more with RCs. I did it for 9 years, 10 years. I think big stuff now.
I feel like people normally, they go the opposite direction. I feel like they start big and after time, they're like, I need to scale down. This is getting a little big, but a little out of control. But I guess you went the opposite direction. That's cool.
And I collect Hot Wheels. That's another problem of mine. You see some of my videos, I have Hot Wheels generally everywhere. That's one I've been, I don't know, 30 years collecting those.
Wow.
Yeah, some hobbies I changed, some I kept for a long time. But I people use this word a lot, but I find some stuff, it gets stale at times and I need to change it up. I'm like, okay. So I feel bigger cars might be less stale. At the end of the day, I can sell a car. If it's built and it's done nice, I can sell it. It's worth money now. But at least I built it myself. Like the one I'm getting, it's getting pulled out of a bush. So it's not like a running, driving 54 Chevy. It's literally coming to me as a shell, and I've got to do a lot of work to it. So
that sounds exciting and terrifying all at the same time. But I guess if there's anybody who's going to be the person to take on that project, it sounds like that might be the project for you.
I have issues. Yeah.
Yep.
I like challenges. So yeah, no, it's my kind of pet. Keep my mind going. I always want to learn new stuff and keep moving forward. So
that's very cool. I guess the final question I'll leave us here with, it sounds like you, across your hobbies, like you're a tinkerer, I consider what you do very innovative. I think it's very unique. I don't think a lot of people do it. I guess for somebody maybe who is looking to step a little bit out of their shell, looking to try something new, do you have advice for, I guess, pushing yourself to do projects like this and pushing yourself to maybe do something that a lot of people aren't doing?
I say the way I think about it is just don't be nervous. Just sit down. And if you have an idea, keep playing around with it. I started with Inventor. I moved into Fusion 360. I built a whole computer to move into 360. I have an idea and I'm like, okay, I need to get this down. And I need to figure out how to do it. Somebody has done this somewhere at some point. I need to figure out how to do it. That's it. So don't be scared. Are you going to have flaws? Are you going to have mistakes? Is there going to be learning curves? 100%. But you just keep working at it. And if you have a goal about what you have in your mind, My whole goal of designing started out because nobody offered a curved RC light bar. That was it. I'm like, nobody offers it. I'm like, I got to design. And that was my first ever project, which turned out to be a massive project. But it taught me to just keep trying. Same with graphics. I will figure out how to do it. I will figure out how to make it look good and have fun doing it.
That's awesome. Tim, I appreciate you so much taking time out of your busy day to come on here, talk to us, and share so much of your knowledge of all the crazy things that you have going on. For people who, for whatever reason, are not following you yet, can you tell people where they can find your projects online?
Currently, the best place is right on TikTok under VS Customs 3D Design. I do post some stuff still on Instagram under VS Customs. I would say TikTok's where I'm posting a lot of stuff. Great community there. Lots of people to talk to. So check it out there.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for coming on. And with that, bud, that is Meet the Makers.